Welcome to the Spin Axis Podcast. I'm Eric Borzeski.
I'm Jason Nickel.
I'm Tyson Deskins.
Monty Scheinblum.
In this episode, we're going to talk with Monty Scheinblum, a former world long drive champion, about how you create speed in the golf swing. Monty wanted me to read this sentence as the opening line, as something that people often say or is heard or whatever. He can explain it a little bit more. Hit down on an iron to compress it against the ground and hit up on the driver to launch it high with low spin. What's wrong with that? That sounds good, right?
Well, it's good for us because when everybody does that, they're going to stink really bad and have to come pay us money to fix it. No, it's
Fair enough.
You know, I get it. When you hear Johnny Miller's famous for saying that. I mean, who are you going to listen to if you're an average golfer? Johnny Miller or us four bozos? You're going to listen to Johnny Miller. So I get it.
Johnny Miller also said you dial in the draw or the fade while the ball is on the face.
Yeah, I remember that one. You know, look, I can speak from experience. Playing really good golf and teaching really good golf are two completely different skills. And you can draw on one to help the other, but it's two completely different jobs. And if you try to mix them, you're going to screw up both of them. But, you know, he said, you know, the compress against the ground, we know that that's been, you know, that doesn't happen. Because if that happened, the ball would just go straight into the ground. You'd have to have negative lofted impact to do that. And then the hitting up.
It was always funny to me how the ball flight laws people thought that the ball served where the path was. But, you know, if that was true, if you hit down, the ball would go into the ground.
Right.
So maybe that's why they thought you compressed it against the ground, because the angle of attack made the ball go into the ground. But then how would you get a ball in the airborne off mud? It made no sense.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of guesswork in this stuff anymore. It's been measured, but, you know, you have two choices. You can double down on what you've been doing for 40 years or say, okay, I got to change what I think. And that's hard. The other one that you brought up, you know, that I said was the hit up. That stupid chart that they got from Iron Byron, you know, yeah, all things being equal, if you hit up 5 degrees with the same this and that, it's going to go farther than a ball that goes.
So we had some technical difficulties. Monty's back with us. We were talking about how you actually generate speed. We were talking about a little bit of Johnny Miller, but we're just going to move on. How should you generate speed? Right. If you're Iron Byron, yes, you can hit up. But when you hit up 5 degrees, if you're Iron Byron, you can control the face and path very, very well. If you're an average golfer, you're going to hook and slice the ball a lot because you're generating so little spin. The spin axis is very easy to tilt.
Right. You know, everyone thinks that the lower they spin it, the better. And it's like, well, not really.
Theoretically. But empirically and real world, no.
Right. I mean, like I said, if you're competing in the World Long Driving Championship, yeah, hit up 10, have 1,500 speed, and then once in a while you'll catch a good ball, and you got 20 to hit it in the 50, 60-yard wide fairway, it's fine. There's a reason that the tour average is down one, and everyone's counterpoint to that always cracks me up. They're like, well, those guys generate enough club head speed. They can afford to do that. And I'm like, you think when these guys were 13 years old and 110 pounds and couldn't bench press a ham sandwich, we're going, I'm going to be big and strong and swing 135 someday so I don't have to do it the most efficient way possible. You know, you said it right. Iron Byron can manage the face and path hitting up five. I found once you get past up two, it starts to become too difficult to manage the face and path and hit it solid. Everyone who hits up 3, 4, 5 hits it low and in the heel. And you're going to lose a bunch of club head speed when you hit it low and in the heel. Now that we put the nonsense aside, the club head speed comes from some very simple idea. You know, sequencing all of the segments correctly, the hips, the torso, the arms, hands, and club, getting them to fire in the right order and together and the right direction. It's not easy to do, you know, or else everybody would be good and hit at 340. But the concept is simple, you know, speed up what's slow and get everything to link up together.
Right. So sequencing is a big thing. We could talk a little bit about that. Do you have a list in mind? Or,
well, another one of the age old cliches that gets golfers in trouble is, you know, lead with the lower body. Okay.
Yeah. Fire the hips.
Fire the hips. Well, you know,
full turn.
Hip speed doesn't equate to club head speed.
Fire everything.
Okay. Better hip motion equates to more club head speed. And usually that's delaying the hips for a lot of golfers.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
The segments are separated by like 10 milliseconds, 1/100th of a second. And if you're like actively trying to fire the hips and leave the arms behind, your sequence is going to be shot and you're going to hit it nowhere.
Right. We see all the time, for example, LPGA Tour players have faster rotational values for their hips and don't hit it nearly as far as they could or should sometimes. We see juniors that spin their hips like crazy and their arms are left way behind, right? So when we talk about sequencing, it's fire the hips, fire the chest or arms. Honestly, we're going to talk about that in our next episode of the podcast next week, if you're listening to this one. Fire the chest and arms somewhere second, and then the club head is obviously last. But in that, a lot of people fail to fire the arms. Mm. Right. There's actually talk out there about how you want to lead with the body and just let the arms kind of follow behind. No, the game's best players are firing their freaking arms. Their arm muscles are bulging out the whole downswing.
Two stats.
Just square the club face with the
body. Really important in this discussion. Number one, the last time I competed in the World Long Driving Championship was in 2015. When I was 48 years old. That was the first time that I had all of the modern equipment. My long drive swing was scaring 140. I never quite hit 140, but I was 138, 139 pretty consistently. And then my golf course swing that I played golf with was like 122 to 124. My hip speed was actually 100 degrees per second slower on the 140 mile an hour swing. And then the other one was, I can't remember the exact numbers, but they were comparing Martin Borgmeyer, who won 2 or 3 years ago, to like this 70-year-old man who swung at like 80 miles an hour. And the old man had a faster maximum hand speed than Borgmeyer did.
Mm.
But
it's crazy.
Borgmeyer reached maximum hand speed 1/100th of a second or 2/100ths of a second after the change of direction. And the old man had maximum hand speed after impact.
Yeah. Yeah.
So slam important.
Helps. Yeah. So, you know, it's the same thing with another one of the speed producers, vertical force, using the ground, which is, you know, a real big buzzword right now. If you don't do it at the right time, it's useless. And I don't know, you know, I have a body track pressure mat, which is not as accurate as the big fancy force plates. More than half the people that I tested with that thing, their vertical force was after maximum vertical after impact. That's helpful, you know? so it's, you know, again, getting back to one of the older cleats, you got to load the right side at the top of the swing to hit it far. Well,
yeah,
you're going to use your vertical force late if you do that. So,
yeah, you know, I think listening to this conversation, you know, one of the things that I say in lessons a lot to people is golfers say things that they've just heard other golfers say throughout the years. They don't even know why they're saying it. They don't know what it actually means. They just say it because they hear everyone else say it. And then they say it so much that they believe it. And then when we as coaches give them the facts, it's almost like we have to convince them that what you've been saying and what you've believed for the last two decades is false, right?
I'm a storyteller by nature. So I have a son, a 17-year-old son, who he's an elite athlete, okay? He's good at all the sports. He's only played like 50 rounds of golf in his life, and he breaks par sometimes.
Yeah.
He shoots 95 sometimes, too, because he has no clue how to play.
Yeah.
Starting quarterback on the football team, guard on the basketball team, hit 300 in baseball. You know, the kid's an athlete. So he's playing when he plays with his grandfather has never broken 90. And his grandfather is an awesome dude, okay? And I want him to come off in a good light because he's got brain cancer and he's not going to make it through the rest of this year. So I don't want this to be a story about what a jerk, because his grandfather's a great guy, okay? My ex-wife's father.
Yeah.
But they were playing one day and he starts giving my son tips. And he gave my son a tip and he goes, "Oh, Papa, my dad told me not to do that." And his response was, "I've been playing golf and reading Golf Digest for longer than your dad's been alive. He doesn't know everything." And that this is coming
That's
from.
True. That's this, true. You don't know everything.
There's a lot I don't know. That's why I'm the next wife. But if you think about the insanity of that statement, you know, because of what I've done in golf. You know, I played the Korn Ferry Tour. I played in a couple of U.S. Senior Opens. I was the world long driving champion. I teach for a living. But that's the mentality that the golfer has. And my running joke is, I tell all my clients, if you ever start a sentence with, I heard or they say, you most likely have to do the opposite of that to hit it better.
Yep.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about most of those old Golf Digest magazines were just what pros felt.
Right.
And they would write it down like it's, you know, it's the Bible. It's crazy.
My favorite one of those was they had Greg Norman on some massive scales, right, swinging a golf club, and they would show the scales and where the weight was at impact. But when you're on a mechanical, meaning like just a literal physical moving parts scale, it takes time for those arrows that point to the numbers to move.
Big time.
And the golf swing happens really fast. So it showed him at like 50-50 at impact. And I'm like, you could look at it and be like, nope, that's not right. Like, and there was a whole article on it. And I'm just like, okay, whatever. Not going to read that one.
I'm sure you guys are on board. One of the most difficult things that I have getting people to wrap their heads around is the shift to the left is the last move of the backswing, not the first move of the downswing. Everyone has trouble with that.
Nobody, you do see people do it too early, but there are literally people that just shove their pelvis forward immediately on the backswing.
Right.
That's too early.
Yeah. Right.
But outside of the people that shift an inch or two back, okay, almost nobody goes forward early enough.
Right.
For sure.
100%. And when I you know what? I got to find it again because it was very valuable. I had DeChambeau's and Scheffler's pressure traces. And when people saw how early those two guys go left, they go, no joke, this was their response. So DeChambeau and Scheffler reverse pivot? And that's what I'm supposed to do? I'm like, that's not a reverse pivot. You know, that's what you were told was a reverse, but it's not.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have people do this all the time. Sometimes you have to know your student because some people can't throw a ball.
100%.
Okay. Some people say, oh, throwing is a natural act. Dude, I've seen people
look at Rory McIlroy.
If you watch people throw,
it was awful.
He threw out the first pitch. It's horrible.
Oh, it was terrible.
These are people not even off the mound. I get that the mound can mess some people up. That's why they have celebrities throw from the grass in front of the mound, so where it's flat, and they still screw it up, like horribly.
Yeah.
They step with the wrong foot. That whatever, they do it badly. So you have to know your student. But I will have them throw a football or baseball, simulate throwing a football or a baseball, or I have a foam football. And I will ask them, what direction is the football moving when you start to move forward? And obviously the football is going backward when they start to step forward, or pitcher from the stretch, right? You bring your knee up.
Right.
The baseball is going backward as your front leg is going toward the batter. And I'm like, the timing is almost exactly the same in a golf swing. It's that early.
Yeah.
And here's how difficult it is. My son is 17, as I said. He's been a pitcher and a quarterback for years and years and years and had how many thousands of reps at both. And when he picks up a golf club, he wants to load the right side.
Yeah. You know, so Monty, let's just, you know, what would you say is, you know, the one or two biggest traits of guys that just create a massive amount of speed, you know, in your experience? You know, what do you see as one or two things that almost all
besides
those guys
being born with it? Because besides some people just, are born with
right. Right.
You know, what do you see?
Number one, strong hands. Yeah. If you don't have strong hands, you can't control the momentum and the movement of the club head when it's moving that fast. Okay. But as far as mechanical issues are concerned, the number one is you see a lot of long drive champions that get left super late. Because they're strong enough, and plus they're trying to hit up 10 anyway.
Yeah.
So they can use the ground and hit up 15, and it's fine. But
and they have to get one out of eight in the grid, so.
Right, right. And that was the advantage, you know, to digress, that was the advantage that I had. I'd hit five or six out of six in the grid, so I'd get the one bounce off of one of them. But anyways, they accelerate their hands early. That is the number one thing that amateurs have to get through their head. And the problem is every single one of them, since they were a child and picked up the club, it's a body-driven swing and the arms and hands are along for the ride. I had an expert tell me, I didn't even know this 5 or 6 years ago, if your feet are attached to the ground and there's gravity, it is physically impossible to not lead with the lower body.
Yep.
So trying to lead with the lower body is redundant. And I'd say, I don't know what you guys see, 90 to 95% of the golfers I see, and it might be 100% over the handicap of zero, accelerate their arms late somehow. They reach maximum hand speed way too late.
P6 is too late. P5 is about right.
Yes.
I see people, I don't see too many people after impact. That would be nuts. But I see plenty of P6.5s, you know, somewhere in there.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
A ton of people.
And, you know, here's the other thing. And again, I've become a nerd in my old age. Any tidbit of information I can get that can make me a better instructor, I find. And there's a reason why track sprinters rehearse this move before they're getting ready to race, and why they don't run like Elaine making fun of Molly Shannon on Seinfeld. The more force, the more downward force you have doing this, the more downward force you get in the opposite leg into the ground. So if you want to use the ground with that lead leg, you better be doing this really hard and really fast.
Monty is pumping his arms up and down for the audio listeners of the podcast.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah.
I wanted to say this, like a big part of what I find with people to get them to hit the ball farther and swing it harder is they'll be like, oh, I have an armsy swing. I don't want an armsy swing. Most everyone who says they have an armsy swing doesn't use their arms early in the downswing. And then their arms have to fire at the end or else they lose swing a foot over the golf ball. So they feel the arms hitting the ball. But if they use their arms earlier, like immediately or as soon as possible to start the downswing, that's using your arms more, but it's not an armsy swing.
Correct.
Then everything sequences better.
And here's how that is one of the best points you can possibly make to anybody. And here's how I know how misunderstood.
Ever.
What's that? Ever. Ever.
Ever.
Ever.
I made a video that I put on YouTube like 10, 12 years ago. And I said, here's where the armsy look and feel comes from. You fire the body, the arms and hands are way behind. You run out of range of motion, the hips stall, and the arms take over. It looks like an armsy swing. It feels like an armsy swing, just like Eric said. And the only way to fix that is to fire the arms earlier. And I did all the visuals and I showed what happened. I showed amateur swings. I showed me swinging. I showed Tiger swinging. And 70% of the people said, you're an idiot. Nobody does this that's any good does this. You're teaching people to have an even more arm-dominated swing and you're a moron. And I'm like, well, probably true. My ex-wife agrees with you. But, you know, there's literally a 100% success rate of getting better club head speed and better impact conditions when golfers try to accelerate, whether it's their lead arm or both their arms or their hands. When they try to do that sooner, all the numbers go better.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think it goes back to one of the points that we talked about earlier. As coaches, we're fighting an uphill battle. We're fighting an uphill battle of beliefs over the last however many decades. You know, social media, when people see somebody that they connect with or they like, they hear the message, they buy into it. Whether the message is correct or not, they buy into it. And then people, unfortunately, once they buy into an idea, we can present all the facts and data that we want to them. They're not going to believe it, right? And so I think as coaches, that's where sometimes we have to sort of succumb to the fact that we're not going to convince everybody, and that's okay. As long as we're helping our players get better, that's our job and that's what we're doing.
I have one thing to say on what you said. That's an excellent point. If you're struggling with your golf swing for whatever reason, age, distance, accuracy, whatever, if you're struggling, you need to find someone that you don't connect with, that doesn't fit your narrative, and that says things that you've never heard before and that you find to be ridiculous. Because your current narrative and the things you believe to be true are why you're struggling.
Love that, Monty. Love that.
Yeah, well said. It's like something often that I ask students of like, how are you trying to hit the golf ball? And you get the, well, I'm trying to do this. It's like, okay, well, you're doing that. And that's why you're not hitting the golf ball well.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
You have a poor concept.
Yep.
Yeah.
And change is hard. Let's face it. Not just in golf, change is hard.
Yep, for sure. Monty, thanks for jumping on here with us. If our listeners want to find out more about you, you know, where can they find you?
My website's called Rebellion Golf, or at Monty Scheinblum on Instagram. That's where most of my stuff and what's going on is.
Thanks for coming on.
Of course. Love being on here.
Jason, where can people find us?
You can find us on all social medias at The Spin Axis, and you can find all our old episodes at thespinaxis.com.
Take care.